For weeks, even months, we've seen a very high-stakes tug-of-war going on between Washington and Moscow. In the middle of the two countries, not a rope, but an alleged arms trafficker, Victor Boot. He has now been extradited from Thailand to the United States. He's nicknamed the Merchant of Death. And he faces terrorism charges in the United States, along with charges of trafficking in arms. And some of these charges go back to the 1990s. He's accused of supplying the weaponry for civil wars and conflicts in Africa, South America, and the Middle East. He was actually flown out of Bangkok earlier this morning. The Thai government approved his extradition almost literally at the last moment. And joining us now with more details, Douglas Farah. He's the author of Merchant of Death, Money, Guns, Planes, and the Man Who Makes War Possible. Good morning.
Good morning.
So first of all, Merchant of Death, explain to us why he got this nickname.
He got the nickname from British parliamentarian Peter Hain after he was identified as being the person who was flying in weapons to multiple conflicts in Africa, particularly Sierra Leone and Liberia, also Angola and the Democratic Republic of Congo. And because of his ability to move large amounts of weapons and greatly increase the mayhem occurring in those wars, he was dubbed the Merchant of Death.
Well, let's talk about these charges that he faces in the United States. So Russia claims that he is an innocent businessman. That is what Victor Boot claims as well, that everything that he's done is legal and above board. Russia was fighting to get him back into Moscow, where he would presumably walk free. They do not accept any of these charges that the U.S. makes against him, right?
That's correct. His basic defense is the taxi driver defense. He says that, you know, taxi drivers don't look in the luggage of their customers when they board their taxis the same way he didn't and was not responsible for knowing what was going on his planes as he was flying them. And in fact, he did a great deal of flying for the U.S. government during the Iraq invasion. He did flying for the United Nations. He flew for Great Britain. So he did a lot of legal activities in conjunction with some of the LaSalle that he was wreaking elsewhere.
Well, let's describe that in a little more detail, Douglas Farah. I mean, Boot's business model was pretty interesting. He bought himself an Air Force and then used that fleet of planes to deliver humanitarian aid as well as arms in a complicated network that really involved a kind of global shell game. Is he unique to this particular business model?
I think he was a creature of unique circumstances, both globally and internally in what used to be the Soviet Union. So I don't think what he did can be replicated. But yes, essentially, he saw that there was a great deal of aircraft abandoned across the Soviet Union with no money to fuel or maintain them, coupled with a large inventory of weapons and arsenals that were no longer being guarded because the Soviet Union had collapsed and soldiers weren't being paid, etc. So he knew from his time in Africa as an officer in the Soviet Air Force that there was a market for these weapons. So he simply married up New World, New Age capitalism from the Soviet Union with entrepreneurial skill and began moving these things out. And but he also did a great deal of legal activity.
And he's worked for everybody, right?
Exactly. He didn't care. He flew a great deal for the UN. He flew peacekeepers into Rwanda. He was flying World Food Program food aid into the Democratic Republic of Congo. At the same time, he was arming both sides of that conflict, Mobutu and Laurent Kabila, and then supplying the humanitarian relief for the conflict he was helping to fuel.
There are so many rumors that abound about Victor Boot, and many of them have to do with what goes on secretly in Russia. His name has been connected even with the Russian Prime Minister, Vladimir Putin, and some people say that that's the reason that Russia doesn't want him to be extradited to the U.S. They're afraid about what he could reveal. He himself says he knows nothing. What's true?
Well, it's hard to know exactly what's true, but I think there's no question that in recent years, toward the end of his career, he'd become much more a creature of the Russian state than he had been in the earlier part of it. He does have connections that go quite high into the Russian government, and I think that there was a lot of concern both for the precedent this would set of having one of their own extradited back to Moscow, and he also knows a great deal about how their weapons market around the world works. The Russians' attempts to penetrate into the Latin American market again, a lot of weapons flowing into Somalia. He's likely to know about that sort of thing. So I think it would be embarrassing if he were to begin to tell all he does know, and I think he does. Does know a great deal.
And in point of fact, I was reading something in the New York Times in which they said the reason why he's not known well in Russia is because journalists have stopped covering arms trafficking there. They feel it's too dangerous, that there are threats from the government for covering this industry.
Well, yes, I think it is a very dangerous industry, and we've seen overall the climate of investigative journalism in Russia, you know, collapse with the recent beatings of the recent journalists and the ones that have been killed in the not-too-distant past. So I think that there is little incentive for people to go out and look at an industry that that is beneficial to a lot of people in the Russian state.
Any indication of how much he's worth?
Well, it's very difficult to say. I think that ultimately his machine, and in our book we looked at that a little bit, trying to figure out, he was paying out a great deal of money for the services that he was, and the bribery he needed to keep things going and that sort of thing. So one doesn't get the impression he amassed, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. I think he made a lot of money, but I don't think he made, you know, a vast fortune.
So, Douglas Farah, what's your best guess on what happens with him once he gets to the United States? How do you think the Obama administration is going to play this trial, knowing that they're trying to repair and even strengthen relations with Russia?
Well, I think they'll try to keep the Russian element out of it, try him strictly on the charges of trying to aid and abet the FARC in Colombia, and hope it goes very quickly and doesn't damage other relationships.
And what are the chances it's going to go quickly and without a hitch?
I think fairly quick. There's a precedent for this in other cases very similar to this, and I think the chances are quite good.
Okay.
Douglas, what question would you ask him, Doug?
Why? Why did he do it? I mean, you see, I covered the wars in Sierra Leone and Liberia, and the human misery that he wrought is what I think is most frightening, and that's what I would ask him.
Douglas Farah is the author of Merchant of Death, Money, Guns, Planes, and The Man Who Makes War Possible. That man has a name. It's Victor Boot. He's also called the Merchant of Death. He has been extradited from Thailand to the United States. Here in America, he will face charges of terrorism and arms trafficking charges, some of them going back to the 1990s.
That trial won't get the answer to that question, though. Why?
No.
That's right.
He might write a memoir if he survives.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.